From Barry Magid's Ending the Pursuit of Happiness. The tension between ordinary mind as the way and ordinary mind as the problem forms the crux of our practice. We come to practice because there are aspects of our mind that we don't know how to come to terms with. Anything we haven't come to terms with in our lives. All of us will eventually grow weak and sick and helpless. Deep down, we don't want to be a human being, because being human means being subject to inevitable pain and suffering. We want to be unique and special, not ordinary. And we turn to Zen to help us turn into the kind of special person we want to be. The attempt at escape is itself an engine of our suffering. The only way out of that struggle is to leave our mind alone and to settle into bodily tension. In our sitting, we find out that we have to face exactly those things that we don't want to face. Practice is being one with mortality, interdependency, and vulnerability. We practice becoming one with ourselves. The more we allow our inner experiences of thought, emotion, and bodily tension simply to be there, the more they become like the sounds of the city. Some pleasant, some unpleasant, but we allow ourselves to feel them as they come and go with less and less resistance and attachment. Who you already are is exactly what you've been looking for. The perfection that we're so busy seeking is to be found nowhere but right here in this very moment, regardless of its content. There's nothing to escape, and there's nothing to gain. We transcend nothing, and nothing lasts. Just pay attention. As we sit fully experiencing this moment, experiencing our bodies, our thoughts, our feelings, and this sensory world, we sit in wonder, even as we sit in the mundane. We don't practice to become perfect. Practice is the expression of our perfection. We are, as I've mentioned, creating a new liturgy book for Living Vow Zen. And I read over this book by Barry Magid called Ending the Pursuit of Happiness. It was one of my favorite Dharma books years ago, and in rereading it, I saw why. And I excerpted and slightly adapted some of its language to create that reading that you're getting a preview of. It's quite a powerful reading. In some ways, for those of us who are aiming towards something outside of our experience, we're aiming to become something other than what we are, hearing this reading feels like a real disappointment. We're held forth the promise of awakening. And we're told that what we get is ordinary mind. This afternoon, there was a moment when it had been sunny earlier, and I'd gotten home from work, and then these clouds rolled in, and it started to rain, and it got heavier and heavier. And it was interesting, my inner world mirrored this outer world. Actually, I don't believe there are two such worlds, but in our way of speaking. And my mood just sank. And I found that there was all this sorrow welling up in me, source unknown. And for the tiniest glimmer of a moment, I thought, aren't I a Zen master? Aren't I only supposed to experience bliss states? And then I laughed at myself and paused for a moment and let a tear roll down my face. And there's something in that just allowing, allowing ourselves to be just as we are. It is so liberating. I could breathe again. There's a whole kind of literature that talks about the way that we have secret practices that we bring to meditation. We're not even really conscious that we're doing it. But we have these secret practices that are like compass points for our practice. Perhaps they're feelings that we are particularly attached to, and we want to have more of the good stuff. I mean, fundamentally, that's what it boils down to. We want more of the good, less of the bad. And we don't even notice that we are the ones who create those categories in the first place. We just take them as true. Of course, happiness is better than sorrow. Love is better than anger. The list is infinite. And then through these subtle preferences, and sometimes not so subtle, we begin to shape our orientation and our practices to try to control the outcome. So that when we take the Buddha seat, we fit some kind of archetype of what we think Buddha is. The Buddha is never foggy. The Buddha never gets confused. The Buddha is always charismatic and funny. Whatever it might be, the Buddha is always peaceful. The Buddha is always this, that. We create our own prisons. We keep trying to, this is the engine of our suffering. We keep trying so hard to become something other than what we are. But we don't see that it's the engine of our suffering. We don't see that. We think the suffering is that, you know, we have sad feelings sometimes, or that we get confused sometimes or whatever, that we make mistakes. That maybe we feel ashamed sometimes. That's the real issue. If I can get rid of those things, I'll finally be a Buddha. Well, if I never got angry, then I'd finally be a Buddha. And then we work so hard. But just think about what that is. We're rejecting ourselves when we do that. We're rejecting whatever is arising just out of infinite causes and conditions. The changing weather. We say, I don't like that weather. And we get to work. And of course that adds, it heaps a kind of suffering on suffering, if you will. It adds a layer of self-rejection into the mix. But we say, oh, it's for my own good. It's so that I'll be happy later. So these secret practices that we carry into our sitting, we actually can't necessarily always become aware of them on our own. You know how they say, and I've said it before, you can't see your own eyeballs. We can't see that we are even doing these things quite often. We can spend years and years and years trying to turn a clay Buddha into a wooden Buddha. Polishing a mirror. Polishing a tile, trying to create a mirror. Just trying to turn ourselves into some archetype, some vision that we're not. And it's so humbling, isn't it, to realize, God, you know who I am? I'm just someone who gets pissed off sometimes. Or I'm just someone who, sadness visits me. And so we treat our practice like this kind of endless self-improvement project. And it is endless, you know. Because we're just reifying these habits of rejecting ourselves and trying to turn into something else. That becomes the practice. That's what our lives become. Just playing out our lives on the cushion. So time and a time again, we maybe avoid Dokusan. Or we come to Dokusan and hear, yeah, why don't you stop doing that? And we say, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't know what's really wrong with me. He doesn't know how bad I really am. He keeps saying I'm already Buddha, but I know that's not true. Keeps telling me that this particular attachment that I have is actually my prison. But I know it's not true. And that's okay. That's okay. I think that we do have to just do that. We just kind of have to let it play out. Until we give up. Sometimes there are these moments that are, the forces are greater than we are. The powers at work. For some of us, it's Sesshin. It's being held with our feet to the fire for a long, long time, longer than we can maintain the facade. And we give up all along the thing we've been most terrified to do. So scared of just being what we already are. But we just are worn out by this endless sitting and walking and sitting and walking and silence and silence. Where is my escape? Where is Netflix? Oh my God, if I could just eat some fucking Fruit Loops. I could finally get out of this cycle in my head. God. And the session goes on and on. And maybe we're lucky enough to wear ourselves out and just get tired. Say, oh, fuck it, to hell with it. And we just sit there. And the tears come down our face, or the laughter. And we go, oh my God. Oh my God. All that time that he's been saying, this is it. This is really it. I really don't have to be better than I am. The world rises up to meet us no matter who we are. It offers itself to us so intimately every single moment. There is no gap between you and the world. It doesn't exist. There is no separate self for you to improve. It's not there. Literally a figment of our imaginations. The whole thing's made up. And when we see that, it makes us cry and it makes us laugh all at once. What a remarkable freedom that's always been available to us. Just let yourself be. And I love the way Barry Magid writes about this. That all those things that seemed so important in this engine just become like the sounds of the landscape. Here a bird chirping, there the sound of cars. And here a thought, I'm not good enough. And it just passes through. No big deal. No action needs to be taken. It wasn't attached to anything. Our beautiful chant. Who owns the weather anyway? Nothing really to worry about. We sit here together in Sangha each week. And we serve as a reminder to each other that something bigger than our self-centered intentions is always holding us. A deep and powerful reminder. We can begin to have, maybe even have some faith in that. Thank you.